In other news.
You know, the towers did not burn up. They turned into powder in midair.
That's scary to have this helicopter hovering around.
We walk up to him and confront him. They can't stand that.
Welcome to Another News. I'm Jeff Brady. Since 2010, this show, In Other News, has been discussing geoengineering and climate engineering and related Agenda 21 or 2030 deceptions that are being implemented in real time around us all. We've had many guests pointing out the compound lies and exposing the massively funded propaganda campaign to normalize fake clouds and artificial skies across the planet. As a result, I would say that WBAI is the only radio station in New York City honestly discussing this issue. If we're not vigilant now to expose this strategic long-game operation bent on controlling the full spectrum of our climate, it will become even more commonplace in future generations. It may in fact be too late, but full exposure of this deception may still occur. The generations 20 years from now may not realize it's not normal to see multiple lines and anomalous features in our skies. They may not know of the work Dane Wigington, Gwen Scott, Pauline Cantwell, Mike Castle, Dr. Perlin Jerry, Cindy and Jim Pakulis, the What in the World Are They Spraying production team, the many more courageous warriors and Skywatch websites have done to sound the alarm against these operations clandestinely deployed in plain sight. Another facet that reveals itself when investigating this topic is the public's psychological vulnerability, often exploited by institutions to distract from ongoing aerosol operations, even though if you spend a few minutes observing the skies objectively during these operations, you will get visual confirmation. Longtime Pacifica listener, who works with the Agricultural Defense Coalition, Vivian Warkenton, asks, "Isn't it just a little strange what the geoengineering scientists describe as their scheme for solar radiation management looks almost exactly like what we see in our skies already? That is, jet trails that expand exponentially and become long-lasting, dry, moisture-less, massive, quote, cloud cover that dims the sun on what would normally be a cloudless day." This is also described by the Council of Foreign Relations Unilateral Geoengineering Workshop from May 2008. Quote, "Potential types of particles for injection include sulfur dioxide, aluminum oxide dust, or even designer self-levitating aerosols." Here's an example of the game of semantics and deception that's being played right now. Groups of scientists and concerned academics are mired in the false reality of studying the ethics or potential reality of deploying climate engineering as if they've never been outside or have looked at the sky lately. There was a climate engineering conference in October 2017. Have a listen to this example of propaganda. It's basically a roundup of people talking about geoengineering as mitigation for climate change.
Well, good evening, everybody, and welcome to the CEC 17.
Climate engineering falls into two parts, solar radiation management and carbon removal from the atmosphere. One part is to try and reduce the amount of sunlight that is reaching the Earth, which is causing warming. The second part of climate engineering involves trying to remove the carbon dioxide from the atmosphere.
Climate change is really devastating our countries. And if there's a way of stopping that through climate engineering.
Having an option when times get rough, and times are going to get rough really soon, is something what everyone.
The social programming agenda is to act as if geoengineering or climate engineering isn't happening. This type of propaganda has saturated the internet, but if you take some time to glance at the comments on a video like this one, you'll find that most know these people are misinformed or bad liars. Geoengineering is a trillion-dollar industry kept secret and deployed in real time in plain sight. We're bringing this information to you so that the flywheel of truth can build its own momentum, because the lies and propaganda and truth inversions can be very powerful. The truth about real-time climate engineering doesn't reach the mainstream news and 98% of the progressive media. We welcome back returning guest Pauline Cantwell. Pauline Cantwell has represented Peace Action, the nation's largest grassroots peace organization at the United Nations since 1994. She helped form the Peace Caucus there and has served as convener of the caucus since 1995. She monitors disarmament issues at the UN. She presented wild cards in climate change at the 2007 United Nations NGO Conference on Climate Change. Pauline recently gave two presentations at the Greenwich Library in Connecticut, focusing on weather weapons designed to intentionally modify the climate and weather, earth systems, and or trigger seismic events as part of the strategic or tactical war. Pauline, welcome back to Another News.
Thank you. I'm glad to be back.
Well, for many years, you've been bringing awareness to the issues of climate engineering, using weather as a weapon, and how geoengineering projects are being sold as mitigation for climate change. Recently, you gave a presentation at the Greenwich Library in Connecticut on these topics. How did it go in terms of feedback and the turnout?
Well, actually, I've given two presentations in the last month. One yesterday, the Wild Cards in Climate Change. The topics were manipulation of weather and climate, weather as a weapon, and the dangers of geoengineering, focusing on solar radiation management. November 12th, I gave another program, How Do You Like Your Weather, Natural or Man-Made, and focused on geoengineering / climate engineering because they keep changing the terms, and pros and cons of climate engineering, weather modification, and scientists, institutions, and funding. It's interesting because it was in the paper in November. I had a totally different audience than I had yesterday. The audience in November was very aware of geoengineering. They're very aware of watching the sky and watching the lines in the sky and watching our weather change. The meeting evolved into everybody going off on their conspiracy theories on the World Trade Center and different things. People handing out DVDs, what in the world are they spraying, different things like that. They listened to Dane Wigington. So mainly the audience was, you know, people already committed. Yesterday, it was a different audience, and they came because they saw the publicity. And it seems like most of them believe that CO2 is causing global warming, that we're actually in a period of global warming, and CO2 is the cause. And we must change our lifestyles. They were very interested in the weather as a weapon, the military's different weapons. So I played the quote that you gave me from...
Oh, yeah, Pauline, that's from Ken Caldera, and that was from an interview back in 2006. I was invited to attend a conference on geoengineering near NASA Ames in San Jose, California, and it's quite a long time ago, but let's play that clip.
I used to work at Lawrence Livermore National Lab, and I once participated in a meeting where we all sat around the room and thought about how could we manipulate geophysical systems to use it as a weapon. The meeting was about weaponizing geophysical interventions. That means, you know, could you somehow interfere in Earth functioning in a way that you could use it as a military weapon? Could you change climate? What could you do in terms of manipulating the sort of Earth's physical systems to as a weapon? Well, you know, some of the ideas were okay, we could blow up hydrogen bombs, you know, underwater, offshore, and make a tidal wave that would go over a city. And, you know, the result was, well, isn't it easier just to drop the hydrogen bombs on the city? You know, that there, now you could imagine, though, say, putting pathogens in a cloud, let the cloud, you know, go over somewhere and then would rain down on your enemy and create, you know, do chemical or germ warfare in this kind of way. And that might work against something that we say is big as the former Soviet Union, where, you know, you could be pretty sure that within a few days that cloud would rain out.
Okay, that was a clip of Ken Caldera, and he's talking about using weather as a weapon. This is what they were discussing when he worked at Lawrence Livermore. What are your thoughts on that clip?
Well, I actually printed it out and put it on the back of a page from a book called Tomorrow's Weapons by Rothschild. And it was published in 1964, and it is mainly about germ warfare, but it had a couple of pages that showed how they would put disease on weather fronts that moved down from Siberia, could use those as a threat against China. And so I just copied those two pages and put that on the back, because this has always been talked about by military. And so I thought it was interesting that Caldera was actually coming out and saying how they sat around talking about these things. I also played David Keith's interview with Stephen Colbert, the 6 minutes at the very end, because a lot of people we had about 25 people there, and at the end there were about a dozen left, and they were still not convinced that this was happening. So listening to David Keith talk about it, putting tons of sulfate in the air and how we're going to save the world with pollution.
What are your thoughts on how the word geoengineering began to be used by hundreds of journalists and articles that poured out into the public domain around 2009? Now, you don't hear about it as much, but back then it was intense. However, the same thing continues, meaning the real-time aerosol operations, and the sky looked exactly like what's being proposed by geoengineering scientists.
Well, I think they've had to back off on it because there was a big, strong movement to stop the geoengineering projects. There was a movement called HOME, Hands Off Mother Earth, and people from all over actually stopped some of the geoengineering projects. They were able to stop the dumping of iron in the ocean when they were going to dump iron. Planktos was going to dump it by the Galapagos Islands, and they shut down a marine whitening experiment that was going to be done off the California coast. And the last I see on that campaign is like 2010. But it was a very global campaign. Now they've switched to climate engineering, which is exactly what they're talking about doing. So they're always changing their terms. About the time you get used to calling it one thing, they change the name of it. And so it makes it hard to keep up with it. So I don't know. To me, climate engineering sounds more dangerous than geoengineering. I mean, it raises more alarms in my mind that the hubris that scientists are going to control the climate of the planet, that they're going to decide what the temperature is going to be, whether we're going to have sun, how much. And now the mainstream is not covering it. But all we hear from IPCC is CO2, we must get rid of CO2, we must do this.
Mm-hmm. At this time, right? At this time.
At this time, mm-hmm. Yeah. Most of the people that were at the meeting yesterday came in believing that, and I think they left realizing there's more to it than that. I did tell them that water vapor is the number one greenhouse gas, but we can't put a price on it, and we can't set up water vapor markets and build a whole economy around water vapor, but they can change our lifestyle. They can implement a very restrictive lifestyle based on declaring that CO2, which is an odorless, colorless gas that we exhale and that plants need. And plants need the sunlight. They need photosynthesis. So these are two things that they're saying we need to get rid of. Limit the amount of sunlight coming in, which will limit the effectiveness of solar panels, cuts down on our vitamin D, many dangerous effects, and the plants need the sunlight.
They sure do, Pauline. Let's talk about the timeline of how global warming was a concern. Then the hockey stick graph in ClimateGate became an issue, and the IPCC was caught intentionally manipulating data. And then global warming was switched to climate change, and now geoengineering is being introduced as a mitigative policy. Pauline, can you take listeners through a summary of those events?
There were some leaked climate change emails that came out in 2007 when the Copenhagen climate change meeting was taking place, and these were leaked. And so Phil Jones was a British climate scientist at the center of those emails. And they found that his information wasn't right, and they started hiding data and changing data. It's called the UNIPC's Artful Bias. They take the people who write the report, and then they often change it after they sign off on it. If you're doing a group report, you sign off on the report. But then the editors have been known to change it. And these reports are massive. I happen to have a copy of the mitigation section of the 2007 Climate Change IPCC report. It is 850 pages long. The IPCC, International Panel on Climate Change, people assume that's all scientists and that they're all 100% in agreement on all these issues. They're not. A lot of things say slight agreement or strong agreement, but most of the people on the panel are not scientists. It is a political panel. It is written for politicians, and they release the politicians' summary before the report is ever issued. So nobody reads these big reports. I don't know how big the whole report is, but this is only working group three, and it's 850 pages long. Very easy to pick out one little part and keep repeating it. Climate change is anthropogenic, caused by man. We're in a new age, a geographic age, they're calling the anthropogenic cycle. We're causing it. Humans are the problem. And therefore, we must limit humans. We must limit population. We must limit humans' activity. We must rewild the planet. All these things are being said and done. And not just in the environmental department of the UN, but they had 10 conferences in a 10-year period. They had women's conference, population, habitat, which was about cities, social summit. And all of them have all been folded into the climate change agenda.
Do you think that a lot of these operations that they're discussing, especially the weather and climate engineering, are being implemented in real time around us?
I certainly do. I think they started the Operation Cloverleaf in the 90s, and I don't think they ever quit it. It was a CIA operation based in Ohio. But I think that's what we're seeing, that it's just the continuation of that, and it's to create cloud cover, to create an atmosphere that is conducive to military activities, a highly charged atmosphere. I think it's going on every day. I mean, we see the planes spraying here. My twin sister, I talked to her in Austin this morning. She said they were sprayed heavily Saturday, and then they had a heavy fog.
Hmm.
Went home last night, had a heavy fog over the Hudson River.
That's interesting, Pauline, because they sprayed heavily yesterday, and this morning there was a heavy fog here over the Hudson Valley.
Yeah. That's what my friend, he came to the program yesterday, and he said when he got to the Hudson River, you couldn't see out over the Hudson River. The fog was so heavy.
Gotcha. I hear this, too. I'll hear somebody who is in L.A., complaining how bad the spraying is in the sky, the aerosol operations, the lines, the artificial cloud cover that then subsequently spreads out and masks the sun. You know, the temperature drops 5 to 10 degrees and the wind picks up and then the sun goes down. That's the end of your day. Do you think these are highly coordinated operations done at the same time? This is our day. We're going to spray down the population centers. Do you think that happens?
I think it may. I mean, we get sprayed so much. I happen to look out over Long Island from where I live, and I can see, you know, if I get up very early, 6 o'clock, there's usually a low-lying bank of clouds, and then that morphs. It changes. And then, you know, sometimes I wake up and you have blue sky, but then they start spraying. And then it just becomes gray, hazed over. And whether this is happening all over, that's one thing that Rosalind was so good about, because people contacted her and they said, we're having the toothpaste trails. They, you know, she was a database that people were checking in nationally and maybe even globally and telling what was going on. And I think we need that. You know, we see what we have here, but it's hard to know unless I talk to my family in Florida and Texas and Wisconsin. and around what's happening there. But it's the same pattern. You have these lines, and then you have the very red sunsets, and that's barium. I mean, it's just, it looks like the whole sky is on fire. Everybody loves the red sunset. They take pictures of it, and they're so happy. And the scientist said, you know, it will whiten the skies, and people won't be happy about that. The skies won't be as blue, but the sunsets are going to be just great. And everybody loves a beautiful sunset.
Okay. You referenced a name. Some listeners might remember her. That's Rosalind Peterson, a past guest. She used to run California Skywatch, and I think her site URL is still californiaskywatch.com, but it's also agriculturedefensecoalition.org.
Yes, everything's been moved to that website, but it can still be accessed from the other one. And she's always been very, very good on the agriculture issues. I worked with her from about 2005. I brought her on as keynote speaker for the climate change conference in the UN in 2007. And we did a breakout session together, and she was the keynote on agriculture and climate change. And I did a radio show here in Greenwich for 3 years. She's an excellent researcher, and her website has the documents, the science documents, the background, you know, that she educated me. We went to Washington twice together, and I went once by myself and went to every congressional office lobbying on these issues. And they ask us, who's paying you to be here? Because it's the oil companies, it's the big people who are lobbying for geoengineering. But we said, nobody's paying us. We had the map of the 66 weather modification projects going on west of the Mississippi. She made up a map showing all these projects, and that's listed by NOAA. So we argued that all of these weather modification projects by corporations are having a synergistic effect changing the weather. So if one place is creating rain, another place is being denied rain. And so power plants or hydro plants would create rain to fill up their hydro plants. Delta Airline has fog mitigation to keep fog off the runways. Farmers use hail mitigation, all of these different ones. And there are companies all over the world that you can just order weather. If you're having a conference, you can order a typhoon to come and clear it out. There's Elite Technologies in Moscow that is modifying weather all across Mexico using negative-positive ionization. And that's affecting the weather in Texas.
These operations in particular involve microclimates. Can you talk about that and how they might be different from the ubiquitous worldwide operations?
Okay, now this is from a summary of weather modification activities reported in 2015 by NOAA. And it tells what company is doing it and where it's being done. And so the first one on the list is North Dakota Cloud Modification District 2. It covers an area of 8,953 square miles, and it's done by the Weather Modification, Inc., and the sponsor is North Dakota Atmospheric Resource Board. It's rain enhancement. So you have some that are increasing precipitation, increasing snow, snowpack, hail suppression, rain. Texas has a weather mod board that meets 4 times a year, and you have to apply for a license to modify the weather there and then renew it every year. But there are different water districts that pay people to come in and create rain, like the Pecos River Valley. For instance, former military people came in and requested permission to create rain there, and they weren't able to, so then my hometown, Abilene, Texas, was having fires. And so they said they went there and created rain and put out the fires, but they wouldn't tell how they created it. But they found out, the man who's in charge of the Weather Mod Board found they used lasers. And the next year, he suspected that they were not retired military, it was active military. So I had him on my radio show twice. I'm hoping to meet with him when I go to Austin next week.
Thank you, Pauline, for giving us a little more detail on those microclimate weather modification operations that are going on around the country. And the reference is through NOAA. And listeners, if you want to find out more about that in particular, it's posted on Rosalind Peterson's website, agriculturedefensecoalition.org. A lot of listeners are curious about what they're actually releasing in aerosol form into the atmosphere. We've heard at these geoengineering conferences that they would spray sulfur dioxide, aluminum oxide, or the designer self-levitating aerosols. We've had on in the past J. Marvin Herndon, who did some research, Pauline, on coal fly ash. And have you heard anything about coal fly ash being aerosolized and dumped into the atmosphere over populations?
Yes, that is in the dark contrails that you see, the black ones. And I was just going through notes today and I found where Rosalind had listed all this stuff, and it is listed as an ingredient in those black contrails.
Pauline, you were a guest in 2012 on the show, and we took phone calls. We were talking about Agenda 21, and there is a connection to Agenda 21 and geoengineering. But Agenda 21, you've also done a considerable amount of research in that area. I want to play for listeners a clip of some of the phone calls that we received while you were on the air back in 2012 on WBAI. We're going to go to another call. Hi, you're on the air.
Yeah, how you doing, Jeff?
Good.
This is fascinating. You know, this is the first time I've ever really heard anyone, Ms. Cantwell, talk about global warming as not just a end-all and be-all and a, like almost like a religious thing. Because when I was in the military a few years back, I know there were several projects involved in weather domination and weather control as it referred to the battlefield and improving battlefield environments, or for allowing for better radar and detection and transmission of certain weapons platforms and detection platforms. Two questions I had. Number one, do you know of any running military projects? I know there were a few fledgling projects and a lot of white papers about weather control and release of chaff and other particulate matter to help radio transmission and to block enemy radar, and how that would affect the environment. And also the smart meter and the smart grid.
Yeah.
As far as I know in New York, a lot of people don't realize that these smart meters have been installed unbeknownst to property and homeowners. And these smart meters emit EMF, electromagnetic pulse, and they can regulate the amount of power that you use. They can monitor what appliances are on in your house. And with future advances in the smart grid with chips inside of certain appliances, they might be able to turn appliances on, to turn appliances off, even direct marketing to people. Say you use your washing machine, they can send you commercials or on the internet about different types of soap. The invasion of privacy is mind-boggling. So I just wanted to know if you had any insights or any information directly on those two topics.
What military were you in? What branch of the military?
In the Army.
In the Army. Okay, well, the Air Force has a paper that was released in 91, I believe, or 96, I'm not sure the date, but owning the weather in 2025.
Yeah,
not controlling, not managing, owning the weather.
I heard of that paper.
And it is believed that the military never releases something for public consumption until they have something far beyond that.
You're right about
but
that.
That paper details, it goes into great detail. It's thousands of pages long. It goes into Hollywood people they use to create media, to acculturate the people to these ideas. It tells about military operations will become a part of domestic and international security. In other words, they will use it on demonstrations, you know, on the homeland people. We also have a convention that went into force at the United Nations in 1978, and that is NMOD, the Convention Banning the Hostile Manipulation of Weather and Climate.
Mm-hmm.
That was brought about primarily because of the U.S. manipulation of weather in Vietnam, Operation Popeye, where they extended the monsoon season by spraying to create rain and mudding up the Ho Chi Minh Trail and hoping to shut down supply lines.
Yeah.
However, the real reason for the negotiations for that was because the Soviets had created the ability to trigger earthquakes and volcanoes remotely through the use of electromagnetic waves. They came over and briefed our Congress, and we tabled joint resolutions in the Disarmament Commission, and that moved into the General Assembly and became NMOD, the Convention Banning the Hostile Manipulation of Weather, and it cited as a convention that stopped a weapon from ever being used. The scalar electromagnetic is being used very frequently to create earthquakes and set off volcanoes. It's being done by us. It's being done by many people.
And Pauline, the other question was your take on smart meters.
And the shaft, they are doing that. And the smart meters, our CIA has asked for funding to monitor the smart meters, and they have claimed success in arresting at least one terrorist by monitoring their smart appliance, probably television, but
right.
But just the fact that they can decide when you use power. It's a political control tool that I wouldn't want to give to somebody.
And the technology it goes way back to the 80s, I think, where a friend of mine was telling me he installed alarm systems in the 90s, and he was able to remotely tap in through a software program on a computer into somebody's alarm system and to even turn it off because it was connected to a phone line. Smart appliances, smart meters are connected through wireless microwave technology, and so they can go in. We got another call. Hi, you're on the air.
Hello?
Go ahead, caller.
Curious why nobody's really able to really come against them properly. Like, hey, you're on the radio, but what is that doing? You know, I mean, how do we really combat these people? How do you combat somebody who believes in their heart that it's all right to kill millions of people because they'll come back in another life? You know what I mean? I'm just curious about that. You know? Why nobody really talks about the religious aspect behind it. Also, I would like to say, if you can watch Agenda Grinding America Down, that's an awesome video. You should really watch that.
Okay. Thank you for the suggestion. I appreciate that. Pauline, do you want to respond?
Well, I have led a peace caucus at the UN since 1994. I know that they have to deprogram people who have religious beliefs to make them be able to kill people. And I don't care what religion you are. It goes against the tenets of all major religions to kill other people. So there is a mind programming that goes on with becoming a soldier. And then there is a convincing that certain ways are more humane to kill, such as germ warfare or chemical warfare, were sold as more humane than bombs. And now we have electromagnetic pulse weapons, which can knock out electric power grids and that, but not kill people. I just have a hard time with all forms of military, you know, and I do believe that a lot of this is a spiritual thing, that we do need to get back to a spiritual basis of life, and that we wouldn't be messing up the atmosphere. We wouldn't believe that we have to play God and block the sun, that the sun is bad, that God made a mistake somehow when he made the earth. And I do not believe it is carbon dioxide, because we exhale carbon dioxide and the plants breathe that in. So it is a balance of nature. But we have upset the balance of nature.
Hi, caller, you're on the air.
Hello?
Go ahead.
Hey, yeah, Pauline, I had two questions. One is, what is the military budget today, and what dollar amount would you advise the military budget to be, you know, if you could, you know, you were an advisor to the Congress? And the second question is, made a reference to the Merritt Parkway Trail in Greenwich. I thought you said it was something about it being on the Merritt Parkway, but it's actually off the Merritt Parkway, which is...
The bike lanes, right?
It's a bike lane in the woods, kind of, and that, to me, is problematic for a number of reasons, but I sort of got the feeling that you have a problem with bike lanes in general, or I don't know.
No, I have a problem with them taking highway funding and building bike lanes. because they're taking more and more of the highway dollars, and the highways are getting very decrepit. And, you know, around Greenwich, the I-95 gets in serious state of disrepair. But I was not at that meeting. I was out of town. And that is a bicycle lane that's supposed to go all the way from Florida all the way to Maine, yeah, bicycle pass.
Yes, East Coast Greenway.
But a lot of what they're doing in cities is putting the roads on a diet.
Mm-hmm.
And what they do is squeeze the traffic down to one or two lanes in each direction. And they're making more and more toll roads owned by foreign corporations. So they're making it more expensive to drive cars. Truly, the agenda is to do away with automobiles, to do away with ownership, to do away with private housing. You know, it is a socialist agenda.
Pauline, I want to thank you very much and thank the callers very much for the great questions and insightful questions. We're running out of time. We have to wrap things up. And I just want to add that if listeners are interested to find out a little bit more about these conferences coming up, and there's one today in Stockholm, the Rio Plus 20, if you put that in a search engine, Rio Plus 20, then you'll find out about the Stockholm Plus 40 conference, international conference that's happening right now. Pauline, some of the callers were really interesting, and we were talking about the United Nations agenda for the 21st century. Can you talk about where that is at this point? This is 5 years later from that radio show. Has anything significant occurred in that arena?
Well, in fact, it has. They have moved from Agenda 21, which was the umbrella that the follow-up to the Environment Conference in Rio was under. Now they have the Millennium Development Goals, and it's much broader. It's about 15 goals. And so everything is under that. So they're not even talking about Agenda 21 anymore at the UN. It's all about Millennium Development Goals. But Agenda 21 is a plan to put people in cities, to move people from the rural areas into cities, and to create a new kind of world. There was a meeting in Austria with the Secretary General several years ago where the papers were leaked, and they admitted that it had nothing to do with the climate or saving the planet environment. It was about implementing a new economic agenda for the world, a control agenda. So they're no longer meeting on Agenda 21, talking about Agenda 21.
All of that material about concern for the environment was BS, and it was really an economic system being pushed onto society?
Yes, actually, I have the documents on my website, A World Alert, and Ban Ki-moon brought all of his lieutenants, top lieutenants, to a resort in Austria right before NGOs met in Germany that year. And the documents were leaked by Fox News. And what they said was, we've got to get rid of the pesky notion of national borders. It really isn't about environment. It is about shifting money from the developed world to the developing world. It's about controlling where people live and how they live. It's about getting rid of cars and getting rid of houses and all those things.
Another issue that's surrounding geoengineering and really our society in general on many topics, is consensus science. Could you elaborate on that for listeners, please?
The UN keeps reiterating that the science is settled, that there is consensus, that's complete agreement. Climate change is real, and man is causing it, and it's mainly because of CO2. Consensus science, we are not allowed to talk about what is true or good in the public source unless we have medical or academic credentials, and even then, only if we strictly adhere to their consensus science, a code word for censorship that delegitimizes freedom of thought and dissent. Some people ask me what my credentials are. Am I a scientist? How can I speak on this? I said, I'm not a scientist, but I can read the documents. I can read what they're proposing to do. I can listen to the tapes. And I can understand what the plan is without being a scientist. And so they say only peer-reviewed scientists can contribute. So the scientists who don't agree with the agenda don't get peer-reviewed. They also don't get funding. And in the science world, it's very important to get funded. So you kind of have to go along with the agenda, or you get marginalized. And so the biggest experts in hurricanes have been marginalized because they said there's other things involved, and so they just threw out their contributions. So now it's down to a little clique of scientists who are controlling the whole geoengineering agenda, and they're from our country mainly, and it's very dangerous because they want to control the agenda. They want to control the governance of it, and right now it's being controlled by patents. They're either taking out patents for all of the geoengineering techniques, or they're buying up patents. Bill Gates is the biggest funder, and they have the hope that if there's a planetary emergency, the patenting of these techniques has become by default the governance of geoengineering. Somebody will have to pay a lot of money to use that technology.
All right. So we're talking about the consensus science. And if you're not peer-reviewed, your research on specific weather events or whatever your specialty is that is related to weather control or climate engineering, and especially if you have a dissenting opinion on whether some of these operations should be implemented, then you're easily marginalized. So you have a small group of scientists who are, quote, peer-reviewed, so it's okay for them to contribute. It seems like this vetting process, they'll only let people in that will go along with the agenda.
That's exactly right. And I wanted to talk about the clouds that are being formed. Rosalind Peterson actually bought me cloud stamps. In 2003, our government came out with stamps with these new kinds of clouds. And one of them on there is called a cirrostratus fibratus, and it looks like a big white sun when this cloud starts. And when you look it up, it says it raises the temperature an average of 18 degrees when you have this kind of cloud. And I've seen it here, and I saw it out west this summer in Oregon and Seattle, and it just makes the sun blazing hot. So a lot of these clouds, they know that these cirrus clouds that they create, and they learned this with Operation Cloverleaf in the 90s, and that was a CIA project that was to create clouds to offset global warming, and they learned that they didn't offset global warming. The artificially created cirrus clouds actually exacerbated global warming. So they should have stopped the project because the heat will not go through those clouds, and it especially raises the temperature at night. The nighttime temperatures do not drop if you have artificial cirrus cloud cover. But this one particular cloud is just amazing. I was out in it about 6 weeks ago, and I couldn't stand to be in it. And I grew up in Texas, where the sun is much hotter than up here in Connecticut. And I literally could not be out in the sun that day because it was just so blazing hot. And then when we were in Oregon and Seattle, the same thing. But if you just got in the shade, it wasn't hot. It was just like it was magnifying the intensity of the sun.
It's also really hard to look at, even with sunglasses. You're always squinting during the day if you're not even looking at it. It scatters the light so intensely. I know exactly what you're talking about, but I didn't know that it raises the temperature 18 degrees.
Yes.
And it's odd to me that they would continue to do that despite the cries for lowering the temperature because of, quote, global warming. And so this shows us again that that is not the concern here.
Yeah, I don't think they have any intention of stopping global warming. They know this doesn't do it. I mean, they learned very early because I've read the reports.
Getting back to the agenda of the geoengineering, it's being sold also as a mitigative strategy to climate change. So it doesn't make sense if they know that this particular cloud will raise the temperature 18 degrees, why they would deploy this particular strategy, Pauline. It's very odd to me.
I don't know. On the stamp sheet, it says that it precedes a frontal system, and it usually is a winter, usually occurs in winter, and often produces a halo effect around the sun or moon. It shows, the picture shows a white sun and a halo around it. And thickening cirrostratus frequently indicate the approach of a frontal system. I have noticed that before we have a shift in the weather, a frontal system come in, there's heavy spraying. And I've never figured out whether the heavy spraying is bringing in the front or whether they're just spraying to lay down more particulate matter before the front disrupts it. I don't know. But you generally do have a lot of spraying before a front comes in. But I was seeing this in the summertime. I mean, it looked exactly what I saw in two places this summer. And just the heat from it, the magnification of the heat. And so when I Googled it, cirrostratus vibratus, F-I-B-R-A-T-U-S, it said it raised the temperature beneath it by an average of 18 degrees. So don't ask me why. What is it that makes it just like a mirror is reflecting this huge, bright spotlight? And I do know they do put different things in. And we did have a rocket go over our house, the CARE rocket, Charged Aerosol Release Experiment, and that released aluminum. But that and the Cirrus, they also release barium and lithium, and then they excite these clouds that are, the one that went over my house created a cloud that is only seen in the Arctic. And so it was launched from Wallop Island, Virginia, came over my house spraying this aluminum stuff. My next door neighbor thought a UFO had gone over our house.
I remember you talking about this in our last interview, and I'm glad you brought that up again. The spraying continues. This is 5 years later, and when we had that interview in 2012, we were also seasoned researchers in this topic and thinking that something would happen, there would be some kind of breakthrough. But the secrecy continues, the obstruction, the deception, the lies continue about these operations. And the media for years and years in these articles that talked about geoengineering as if it was a plan to use, and of course not admitting that it was being used in real time. However, a lot of these articles came out, when they come out online, they have a comment section. And most of the people know that these are lies being told. And most of the commenters pointed out they're doing it right now. And this is in the UK, this is Australia, wherever these publications occurred, you look through the comments, and most of the comments are saying this is propaganda. It seems the people who are writing these articles, the editors, a small percentage of the readership are in the minority, thinking that it's not being deployed right now in real time. I think that most people already know it's happening in real time, but because the media is corporate controlled and owned, we're not getting that consensus through any kind of media channels.
Yeah, I don't know that I agree with you that everybody is aware of it.
I said most people.
Most people. Because I find a lot of people who see it, but they don't care. And they really don't see that things have changed. And I don't understand why or how, but I do see that. And I think it's interesting now they have changed it to climate engineering, because it actually goes back. Remember Lyndon Johnson's famous Masters of Infinity Declaration, 1958, when he was in charge of setting up NASA from space, the Masters of Infinity?
Yeah, that quote.
Would have the power to control the Earth's weather, to cause drought and flood, to change the tides and raise the levels of the sea, to divert the Gulf Stream and change temperate climates to frigid, which is exactly what we're saying, that the tides are raising and the flooding, and even the Gulf Stream. They said that was shifted because of the oil spill in Louisiana. But this was exactly what Lyndon Johnson was saying they could do from space. So the second they put satellites in space, they started manipulating the weather from space. And it's always been whoever controls space controls the world. In my speech yesterday, I led that if man can modify the weather, he will obviously modify it for military purposes. It's no coincidence the U.S. Army, Navy, and Air Force have been deeply involved in weather modification research and development. Of course, we're all familiar with the Owning the Weather in 2025, 3,300-page paper released by our military in 1996. And it's always been high on the military's agenda. But if you can clobber somebody with artificial drought, starve them with artificial drought, clobber them with a blizzard, send an earthquake to them. In fact, Korea got hit with a small earthquake after President Trump threatened to knock them off the map. And people assumed he was talking about nuclear weapons, but they had a slight earthquake the next day. And all countries know that many countries have the ability to create earthquakes using electromagnetic waves.
This came out in the before the ENMAD treaty was signed. Can you talk about that?
The ENMAD treaty went into force in 1978. It was negotiated in 1976. The United States and Russia, or Soviet Union, tabled identical resolutions calling for the prohibition of hostile manipulation of weather. It's the Convention on the Prohibition of Military or Any Other Hostile Use of Environmental Modification Techniques. We had modified the weather in Vietnam with Project Popeye, which was to muddy up the Ho Chi Minh Trail, create impassable mud. That continued from 1966 through 1972. That was used as the reason for this legislation. But the Soviets had developed electromagnetic technology whereby they could set off earthquakes. And so I think it was to preempt the use of that kind of technology. I have gone to resources at the UN. I've never been able to prove that, but there's a lot of documents about the negotiation of it and the discussions in our Congress, and we approved it with one dissenting vote, and we're not party to many treaties at the UN. It's never been used. The only person fined under it was Saddam Hussein for burning the oil fields and upsetting the monsoon season. But many world leaders have accused the U.S. or other countries of stealing the rain, causing problems, but nobody's ever lodged a complaint under this ENMAD treaty. And I think maybe because they're afraid to, because the blowback would be too much. I don't know, but it doesn't have any enforcement measures like the nuclear treaties. And it's supposed to be reviewed every 5 years, but it's never reviewed. I think it was reviewed one time. And it was negotiated in the Environmental Department rather than the Disarmament Department, but it is on the website of the Disarmament section of the United Nations. It's a very short treaty.
Right. I was just thinking, Pauline, imagine we're living in a country where the black projects have all this exotic weaponry and ability to control the weather or weaponize the Earth's natural forces and make it look like it was from natural causes. That's their plausible deniability. God forbid you stir the pot and you get on their bad side, and maybe you or a group it threatens funding for some of these organizations connected to the black operations. All of a sudden, there's a tornado or hails in one spot over your house or something. I know it's kind of a joke, but we saw that this past year, a lot of suspicion surrounding those fires in California. You know, had the signature of directed energy weapons, and similar to what Dr. Judy Wood's evidence was pointing out from her book, Where Do the Towers Go? Evidence of Directed Free Energy Technology on 9/11. we need to be aware of these possibilities and hold these people accountable, because if we don't, nobody else will. If other countries are afraid to do anything and call them out, who's going to call them out?
Exactly. And also, my speech at the UN at the climate change meeting was never take a knife to a gunfight, the evolution of warfare and using weather as a weapon. Not only can they hide behind Mother Nature's skirts if you use an earthquake or a tsunami, but they can come. The military can then come in and act as a rescuer. And so they can come into the country. Myanmar had a typhoon, and they refused to let the Americans come in to help because they saw it as a gateway for American troops to get on the ground. And they wouldn't even let American aid groups come in. So some countries are very aware of it. And now we don't know what's happened in Puerto Rico, but that's a blank slate for companies to go in and refigure their whole communications infrastructure.
Reconfigure communications and maybe evaluate resources in the ground. I've heard that that is also a possibility. And tourism, it's easy to manipulate a desperate population. And that's an unfortunate method of modern warfare that I think we're witnessing right now.
And also to force them to move inland. The tsunami, the Boxing Day tsunami in Asia, they moved the people that lived on the beaches inland and put them in concrete houses. They took some of the aid money that was donated and let people develop resorts for wealthy people to go to these places. Now I'm seeing online suggestions that everybody needs to be moved inland in Puerto Rico, moved into concrete houses, hurricane-proof houses.
Pauline, we've come to the end of the show, and I want to thank you very much for being on as a guest and the research that you do. Very few people are digging into some of this research and the work that you do with the Peace Caucus. And I know you're not with that group anymore, but thank you for that work. It's very important. And can you tell listeners, if they would like to reach you, how would they do that?
My email is PaulineA.Cantwell@gmail.com. And if they just put in the message from Jeff Brady's show or something, because I don't open things from people I don't know. I try not to introduce bugs into my system. But that would be the best way to reach me, PaulineA.Cantwell@gmail.com.
And your website is aworldalert.com. Pauline, once again, thank you so much for being on Another News.
Okay, thank you for having me, Jeff.
That's going to do it for In Other News. I'm Jeff Brady. Join me again Monday, 11 p.m. Visit inothernewsradio.com for archives and more information about the guests.